This is Will Friedle from Pod Meets World. Let's be honest. The 90s gave us some great things. The music? Totally rad. The fashion? So fly. Home decor? That's a different story. In HGTV's new competitive series, Totally 90s House, two teams of iconic TV stars take on two homes frozen in time. Paired with HGTV experts, they'll turn dated spaces into fresh modern homes and compete for the ultimate bragging rights. Goodbye, honey oak cabinets. Hello, 21st century. Totally 90s House. Special series premiere starts August 26th at 9, 8 central on HGTV.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo. 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Music, but it's not doing my headache any good today. Tito Puente, my friend, my man, would have been 92 today. I remember how he entertained me through the 70s and 80s and attending his funeral not so long ago. Great children. Tito Puente would have been 92 today. It's raining in Boston. It's miserable here. Raining in Boston, the marathon, very, very soggy. 30,000 runners, a million spectators on this very important day. Of course, the Boston Marathon now just laden with significance far beyond the race. But our own Matt's running. What's up?
Yeah, you know, let me correct you. The rain probably going to hold off until about noon their time. So the elite runners are probably going to cross the finish line. It's everybody else, which is like, you know, 30,000 people who are going to get soaking wet. But Matt Dahl, who works here as the assistant program director, I think is his official title, his running is so good. I mean, this is his only third professional marathon, but he ran New York so well that he was actually invited to Boston. And he's running with the elite runners that begin at 10 o'clock. Normally, you have to wait an hour, half hour, 45 minutes till you get to run. He's with the top runners. So he's already stepped off. He's 9 minutes into the race.
So let me, first of all, congratulate Matt. We're rooting for you, my brother. Give it your all. I'm sure you will. Also, I want to take the occasion to say that the people of Boston have a compassionate streak. And I think that if you were to poll the folks, certainly the folks involved in the case, they would say no death penalty for Sarnaev, the young man who participated in the hideous Boston Marathon bombing. Let him rot in prison for the rest of his life, but no death penalty. That would be, to me, excessive, cruel, unnecessary, and it won't make people feel any better. But that's not my main thrust this morning. You know, what were they, 30 shootings in the metro area this weekend?
I think it was 30 in all, yeah.
Lots of arrests. It was a beautiful weekend weather-wise. The worry is, certainly my worry, that the summer will bring a terrible spike in violence here in the big city. Meanwhile, in another big city, in Baltimore, another young black man has died as a result of a violent arrest. And among the issues we're going to have to address is my call to make each and every police killing a presumed civil rights violation that requires a review by the feds. A presumption of federal jurisdiction in each and every police killing in this country. We also have to talk about why so many young black men are participating in these violent crimes that put them in harm's way, put them in the crosshairs of police activity. But I want to start much lighter. If you just give me a couple of minutes to explain my current condition. And remember that today is April 20th. And I have a headache and a hangover. Yesterday was Dad's night out. It was the chance for the dads at my daughter's school to spend some quality time together, just chilling, talking about politics, sports, you know, the usual. So we got together at Guthrie's, which is a tiny gin mill on Park Avenue, 97th Street. I want to thank Francisco, a very cool New York-born Ecuadorian Dominican guy who knows how to make a mean margarita, not to mention dark and stormy, and Presbyterians, which is really appropriate for most of the dads at my kids' school. Presbyterian is a dark and stormy, except that it's bourbon instead of rum. So anyway, I'm totally hungover. My mouth is dry. I've been drinking Coca-Cola all morning. My headaches, my physical condition matching today's gloomy, rainy, dark, foggy, windy weather here in the big city. The Empire State Building virtually invisible just a block away. I want to thank my buddy Uzi Van Abraham, a fellow dad at the school who, despite our disagreements about Bibi Netanyahu and Israeli politics, was kind enough to get me home. I woke up in the middle of the night, fully clothed, sleeping with my head on the dining room table.
Oh, come on, really?
I swear.
That's great.
So today I'm paying the price. So what's the moral of the story? First of all, is never have a dad's night out on a school night. Mondays are tough enough. Second, alcohol does crazy nasty things to your body. Crazy nasty things to your body. And third, and this is my main point, since it's far less toxic, and remembering today is April 20th, 420, if marijuana was legal, I wouldn't have this hangover. And that's the real moral of my story. 420, April 20th, is a day that celebrates cannabis use. The observance day began at a high school, I guess a San Rafael High School in California. They had a tradition, the kids at the high school, of going to this one location on campus every afternoon at 420 to light up. And then that tradition caught on with the Deadheads, the followers of the Grateful Dead band. Anyway, 420 is a good day to repeat what I've been saying since the early 1970s when I was on the board of NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. I think that'll be one of my great achievements, remembered by biographers and obituary writers. And the reason I was on the board of NORML and the reason I continue to advocate for the legalization of marijuana is because, first of all, almost everybody I know, including the vast majority of you listening to my voice right now on this program, have at least tried marijuana. And the time has come to legalize it across the country. I mean, I'm not the only one saying it, obviously. CNN's Dr. Sanjay Gupta, a man who could be, if he wanted to be, Surgeon General of the United States right now. And he previously opposed pot legalization, and he came around last year or so. He's been preaching that, I quote him, we should legalize marijuana, we should do it nationally, and we should do it now. 51% of Americans surveyed by Gallup are in favor of legalizing marijuana. 47% oppose. There are, as you know, five jurisdictions in the United States that have legalized small amounts of pot: Colorado, Washington State, Oregon, Alaska, Washington, D.C., and I think around 17, 18 others that have more or less legalized so-called medical marijuana, including New York and New Jersey. Although I have to say, I don't know a single person who's actually taking advantage of these very narrowly drawn laws locally. Do you?
It's almost impossible, I know, in New Jersey to get a license. You have to go through.
You have to be
so
like terminal cancer, right?
Yeah. And then even then, there's so many hurdles. I think the number I read was 300 licenses were given out since.
Really?
Yeah.
300.
Really low number.
They have
like
300 given out in Los Angeles in one neighborhood.
Yeah. Right.
I think that's, that's Chris Christie and Andrew Cuomo putting their own personal morality ahead of the populist desire of the people in their states. Legalizing and regulating marijuana will bring the nation's largest cash crop under the rule of law, creating jobs and economic opportunities in the formal economy instead of the illicit market, writes advocates. Scarce law enforcement resources that could be better used to protect public safety would be preserved while reducing corrections and court costs. The advocates go on to say state and local governments would acquire significant new sources of tax revenue from regulating marijuana sales. The criminalization of marijuana use disproportionately harms young people, people of color, sponsors massive levels of violence and corruption, and fails to curb youth access. I agree with all of that. Each and every word. Do you have a different opinion? Call me, 866-HERALDO. If you agree with me, call me, 866-HERALDO. It is 420, April 20th. It is time to end the reefer madness era marijuana prohibition. I swear to God it is. Happy 420.
Get Geraldo now. Get in on New York's most important stories. 866-HERALDO, 77 WABC.
23 minutes after 10 o'clock. 420, April 20th, the day we should all rally to support the legalization of marijuana, the end of the reefer madness prohibition. I'm going to talk about this for the next 10 minutes or so. Then we have a lot of ground to cover. There's some very serious stuff going on out there. As you know, if you've been listening to Noam's newscast, the blood is flowing in the streets, and I'm really worried that summertime is going to bring a terrible spike in violence. We should get the 1,000 more cops that the city council and others and the mayor is opposing, but the city council and the cops want. But we're talking reefer madness, the end of the prohibition. Matt in Queens, how you doing, buddy? Thanks for calling. My first call of the week.
How are you?
Good, buddy.
I'd just like to say, as you listen to all the shows on TV about legalizing marijuana.
There's been a bunch of them. CNN had a whole weekend's worth.
Yeah, I mean, that's all great. And I'm 59 years old, and that's fine and dandy. But what I try to tell these younger kids is, even though it's decriminalized, you can't get into the habit of using it because no job will hire you.
That's absolutely true. They piss test in so many different jobs now. You really circumscribe your own opportunities in life. But I think that you could draw, Matt, a wonderful analogy to alcohol. If you're a drunk, you can't get a job either. And I think that in both alcohol and marijuana use, you have to really discourage it. Thanks for your call. Among young people. You start young, you know, you get lazy, you get distracted. You really, not everybody. I'm sure there's some kids that can handle it. But, I think that booze and pot are exactly parallel and should be exactly parallel. I don't want people drinking in public. I don't want people smoking in public. I don't want youngsters to start alcohol too soon. I don't want youngsters to start pot smoking too soon. But I'm telling you, the prohibition has to end. People have to stop going to jail behind marijuana. It's just, it's so stupid. It's so old. It's so yesterday. John in Brooklyn, what's up? Thanks for calling 866-HERALDO.
Hey, what's up, Geraldo? I don't want to, that last caller brought up my point, but let me ask you this. Why do we have to alter our perception of life with getting high? Is life that terrible? I mean, you work out, you're in great shape, you're in your 70s. I know you're getting high off of working out. So why isn't that enough?
Well, you know, it's a fine question. It's a philosophical question. I don't have an answer. I don't think there is an answer to it. It's a choice people make, a life choice.
Wouldn't you rather your kids were running 6 miles a day than smoking a joint?
Definitely, definitely. And physical fitness has, as you accurately point out, provided me with a lot of satisfaction. But, you know, sometimes you just want to check out. Sometimes you just want to alter your perception. Like, I wear red glasses. People always say, why are you wearing rose-colored glasses, Geraldo? You're always walking around. Sometimes it's nighttime. I see you with the, thanks to the cold, John. I see you with the rose-colored glasses. Because I like the way the world looks with rose-tinted glasses. That doesn't make me a bad person. I still function. I hold a couple of jobs. You know, I'm like the Jamaican guys we talked about on Friday. How many jobs you got?
Nine jobs.
I'm the pilot. I'm the flight attendant. and so forth. But, you know, when you've had a hard day's work, you have a drink when you get home. I have a Bacardi and Diet Coke or a gin and tonic. Like almost every afternoon when I'm done my workout, after you sufficiently hydrate and everything else, you have a drink. Or you have a smoke if you can, if it's legal. And they accomplish the same result. I've never known anyone stick up a bank to buy money to get pot, ever, in the history of mankind. And I, here's Laura. Hi, sweetheart. Thank you.
Hi.
Our
hi,
Harlem Geraldo. Correspondent.
Geraldo?
Yes, honey.
Oh, okay. I was doing something else in here.
Hey, one thing at a time.
Okay, Geraldo, yeah. You know what my concern is about marijuana?
Tell me.
And I'll be very honest with you. I was a pothead in the mid-60s. I'm 63 now. And
still and, cute as a butt.
No. Believe it or not.
I've seen pictures of
marijuana. I was around 20. But here's my concern is how you become so forgetful. Most people are very forgetful. I remember that. And I'm speaking about younger people. I recall my mother saying some years ago.
I don't disagree with that. I mean, sometimes I remember forgetting.
I mean, seriously forgetting.
Very no, Layton forgets
thing.
To come to work.
So just, that's a concern of mine. I just wanted to kind of throw that out.
Well, I agree with you. And okay. And you're Don. I hope you had a good weekend. And I want to end the discussion now, so I'm going to be shifting gears at the bottom of the hour. I just think that President Obama should take the next step and say that he believes that every state should have the right absolutely to declare whether marijuana should be legal or illegal. But he should suggest from his high perch in high office, the highest in the land, and this isn't the biggest issue or the most urgent priority by any means, but the time has come. It's 4:20. It's April 20th. It's a day I think we should celebrate the beginning of the end of the prohibition that has sent countless people to jail, wrecked countless lives, embarrassed untold numbers of people, and legalized pot once and for all.
Geraldo on the 77 WABC app. Get it before you really need it. WABCradio.com.
37 minutes after 10 o'clock. I know I wanted to move on from the pothead theme, but I got so many calls on it. I'm going to take a couple more. And also want to point out in today's Daily News, a funny spread. I want to make sure it's the Daily News, the Daily News. A writer named Jeanette Septiembre writes a whole thing, too burnt to bake or fry, where potheads can buy Primo munchies for the high holiday.
Oh, that's
and
great.
She goes, it's some funny stuff in here. I mean, just how with donuts and French fries with Gop on them, cotton candy, pop rock fries at Sicky Fingers, Dough Locos, raspberry, sriracha donuts, Philly cheesesteak, egg rolls at Pork Slope. And then Mashable, the big website, has the great Brian Kerber, the writer, has what if Starbucks sold pot? The Pineapple Express and Mango Kush smoothies. The Bubba Kush Banana Vreed. Pike's Place Purple Haze. The Sticky Icky Buns. The Maui Wowie Weedashio. Weedashino, I mean. Maui Wowie Weedashino. That's a good one. The Stoned Scone.
That's pretty good.
The Shaken Passion Tea Kush Aid. Anyway, funny stuff. Your calls. I'll take a couple more calls on this. I really have to move on, but it's too funny. His Joe was a retired detective. What's up, Joe?
Hey, good morning, Geraldo. I'm a retired NYPD lieutenant. I was a detective at one point in my career. All throughout my career, I've always been quite conservative when it comes to law and order. And throughout my career, I would occasionally read articles advocating legalization of all drugs. And there would be endorsements in there from retired police chiefs. And I never understood that. And I'd read the articles, and I came to understand it's true because I fought the war on drugs. We're never, ever, ever going to win the war on drugs. As long as there's somebody that wants a product, there's going to be a market to provide it. The fact that drugs were illegal never stopped anybody I know from using drugs. People either used them or did. I'm an advocate of legalizing everything. The legal houses of prostitution in Nevada, nobody's ever gotten sick in those houses. They're carefully regulated, the safe sex is practiced. In Las Vegas, Nevada, and Atlantic City, 24/7 you can buy alcohol. There's no more alcoholics in these towns than there is in any other town. And when it comes to drugs, like I said, we are never, ever, ever going to win the war on drugs. So just stop fighting it and have the government start regulating, as you said.
Well, I think that first of all, thanks for your service as a lieutenant, as a detective at the NYPD. Let me ask you, what do you think about the spike in shootings this weekend?
I think it's a top-down effect. The new mayor of the city of New York is taking a very different approach to battling crime. And I think Commissioner Bratton, unfortunately, has changed. He's not the same guy he was under Giuliani. He doesn't seem to be, well, he's not standing up to the guy. The broken windows policy worked. It just, you know, aggressive policing works. It absolutely does. I've searched many person, but I've never done it where I wasn't allowed to do it. But, it, you know, an experienced police officer does need a lot to go on, to have reasonable suspicion to stop somebody, question them, and insert.
So, Joe, you seem like such a bright guy, and so experienced in real world stuff. I got to ask you about, you know, this perception, as you know, that too many unarmed black men are being killed by cops illegally or unnecessarily.
Right.
How do you see that? Well, let me ask you a more specific question.
Okay.
My idea is every single police killing, and this is what I'm going to talk about in the next hour of the show. Every single police killing, there should be a presumption of federal jurisdiction. Have the feds come in, check out the facts and circumstances. Sometimes it'll be just a 7-Eleven stick-up, a shootout, or something will be so obviously legit and righteous that they'll just come, they'll go. But have that presumption of federal jurisdiction right from the get-go to give people confidence that it's going to be a fair and impartial, you know, review of what happened.
I tried to get through to you last week when you started to advocate this. I'm on the same side of the issue as your friend, Mayor Giuliani. Absolutely not. The federal government, as he said, looks at all police shootings. But unless there's obvious civil rights violations, the federal government does not step in and become the lead investigator.
And why not? Why not?
Because they can be handled by local jurisdictions. I know there's a perception that DAs are in bed with or too cozy with police departments. And in some cases, that may be true. But you have state oversight. I don't think it's a... You'd be federalizing every police department in the country, and I think that's a real bad idea.
Okay, Joe, thanks. You should be like, have your own show. You're a very, very bright guy, and I appreciate your comments. I disagree on the substance of the last one, but that doesn't make you wrong or me right. Is Soma. Hi, Soma. Thank you so much for holding on.
Thanks, Geraldo. Listen, bottom line of the story is that marijuana is a gateway drug. I've seen it up.
You really believe that still?
Yes, I've seen it. Deadheads.
I didn't. Me and Noam Layden didn't go on to any other drugs.
Listen, Geraldo, the woman that called you earlier that told you you lose memory, you lose everything.
Yeah.
I see my friends from the 60s, excuse me, from high school. They're all deadheads, the majority of them. And they were very cool in school, smoking their little weed. They can't think. They forget. They're messed up. A lot of them have MS. They develop all kinds of horrible things. And listen, Geraldo, you're not a millionaire. You're a billionaire. People can turn away and look away and see that you're not doing the right thing. They're going to turn away. The rest of us get caught. We go to jail. That's a bad thing. That's a bad thing. However, having said that, I'd sooner my son go to jail than to lose his brain to marijuana.
How old is your son?
Excuse me?
How old is he?
He's going to be 29.
29? Well, he could do whatever.
He's never done it, thank God. But if he did do it and he got caught...
You sure he never did it? You sure he never did it?
No, he never did it, nor did I.
Really? Never, ever?
I feel compelled to do it because I've seen too many people right on...
Well, you're in the minority, and I disagree. I think that what the cop said, what Joe said, the part that we really agree with the former detective on, is that marijuana is not a gateway, and people are going to smoke it.
The headlines, the city's most pressing issues, Geraldo, today and every day, 77 WABC.
Give me a Matt update. What's going on in Boston?
Yeah, you know, we have this great app so we can check on him as he runs the marathon. He's our assistant program director here. His pace is 5-minute miles, or 5-minute, 58-second miles.
I will tell
you this. What I know about him is he turns on the speed at the end, and he's not there yet. So if you were to continue with this 5:58 mile, he'd finish the marathon in 2 hours and 36 minutes.
I'm trying to remember if I ever broke 6 minutes in the mile, even when I was running 1 mile.
Yeah, exactly. I doubt it. I don't know. I know I haven't.
Not so. To mention, all right, I was going to leave marijuana, but I can't. There's so many great calls. The board is filled. Let me start with Keith in Connecticut. Hey, brother, what's up?
Hey, Armando, how are you?
Good.
Hey, I want to say for me, I'm a little white kid that grew up in Pelham Bay in the 60s and
okay.
the 70s.
Bronx boy, what's up?
I started with drinking beer and smoking pot. Within a year, I was hanging out on Barreto Street, Fox Street, when the South Bronx was the South Bronx, shooting heroin. And for me, it did open the door. But on the other hand, I think it only works that way for people like me, kids who had troubles, broken families, and things like that. I've seen plenty of other people that it didn't lead into a life of drugs. But
so what's your bottom line? What do you think?
No, I think it should be legal, but even more than that, I think heroin should be legalized and controlled.
So how'd you get off? How'd you get straightened out? How'd you straighten out?
It's a spiritual thing.
Yeah, really?
Yep.
I see. I'm a big believer, and congratulations. I'm a big believer in faith-based, families. I just, regardless of your religion, I don't care what you are, but it just seems to me that faith-based families fare better in this crazy world of ours than people who reject it. Michael in Queens, what's up, Michael?
Hey, Geraldo. Bottom line, with all the behavioral contingencies in the environment, we have to be on our knees, some parents, that our kids are not on prescription drugs.
I think that's the real danger, don't you, Michael? I mean, prescription drugs, and now all these overdoses. The reason people are overdosing on heroin is they can't get the Adderall or these other prescription drugs that they are addicted to. They steal them from their parents or whatever, so they can't afford them. They can't get scripts for them, so they go into heroin. I think it's horrible what's happening, the abuse of prescription drugs. But go ahead, Michael.
Exactly.
Make your last point.
Exactly. As a parent, I would, and you said it a few weeks ago, marijuana or cannabis is the lesser of all evils. If you go to any research site and you'll see, comparisons for decades have deemed alcohol and nicotine use as much more dangerous.
Amen.
Also, growing up in Queens, all my bumps and bruises and stitches have been from alcohol. When you
I never got in a bar fight stoned. You always get in a bar fight. Thanks for the call, Mike. You always get in the bar fight because you're on tequila shots. Or the tequila, definitely.
Oh, makes you brave.
Tequila makes you brave and tough.
We're weak and aggressive. Can't we all get along, you know?
But I'm telling you, with Dad's night, there was none of that. It was just a lot of laughs. And then usually, it's kind of an uptight environment. Private school, the Upper East Side, it can be uptight. And people, have their social, segments of that they dig and they stick to. But I tell you, the last night it was like everybody was everybody. It was a lot of fun. It was really a lot of fun. But I did have that. I definitely had that. I won't say blackout, but I definitely don't remember getting upstairs.
That's great.
I know I have doormen, but I don't think they were involved.
They didn't get you to the dining room table?
I don't think they got me to the dining room table. But I can't remember quite how that happened. But that's where I ended up.
Really? No
thankfully.
Elevator ride? You don't remember?
I don't remember the elevator ride at all. Well, I don't remember
putting
the
keys in the front door?
The keys. That's a good point.
It had to be your doormat.
How to get the keys.
Better tip them well this Christmas.
Yeah, we do. But not particularly for that reason. Okay, I'm going to get serious. I swear to you.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Here and now, I promise to love faithfully. You're all I need. Here and now, I vow to be one with thee.
Some good loving to Luther Vandross, I'm telling you. Brings back some good memories. His birthday, Luther Vandross. I mean, Johnny Mathis was earlier, but Luther, really.
Oh, yeah.
So, here's the topic for the hour. Welcome back, 8 minutes after 11 o'clock on 420, April 20th. the day to liberate marijuana. That's not what we're talking about in this hour. We have something, I think, much more urgent to talk about. Let me start first with history. We're commemorating the 150th anniversary of the end of the Civil War, the end of slavery in America. And many powerful commentaries are being written right now comparing the harsh treatment. Now follow me on this one. The harsh treatment during the pre-Civil War era, the harsh treatment of runaway slaves. And they're comparing the treatment of runaway slaves back then to the persistent use of deadly force by cops confronting unarmed black men now. You had one article I just read that recites the melancholy litany of recent cases. You got Garner, Brown, Ford. You got the 12-year-old in Cleveland, Tamir Rice. You got Akai Gurley in Brooklyn, Romaine Brisbane in Phoenix, Tony Robinson last week in Madison, Wisconsin. So this author in the New York Times, Sunday Times, Edward Ball, his name, he wrote about the past impacting the present. Now, Edward Ball is the great-great-grandson of slaveholders. And unlike Ben Affleck, the actor who tried to get PBS to drop the fact that Ben Affleck had slaveholders in his family's dark legacy. You know, they do that genealogy thing. But unlike Ben Affleck, who tried to suppress that, Edward Ball embraces the fact. I mean, in a, you know, he's obviously, his history haunts him. And he describes how young black men who did not have proper papers back in those days, during the slave holding days, were automatically suspect. Here I'll quote from Edward Ball's powerful article in the Sunday Times. My ancestor, William Ball, often rode in a slave patrol, as did other male members of my family, as well as every other slaveholding clan. Deadly force was often used against slaves who resisted being taken into custody. So that's what he writes in the Sunday Times. Lying behind such recent events, the police killings of unarmed black men these days, Ball suggests, is a mentality that originates during the slave period and provides police action with an unconscious foundation, a mentality that might be called part of the legacy of slavery. You follow that?
I do.
Now, I don't know how anyone can compute the connection between slavery and then and police killings now. And many of these commentaries, I mentioned they are powerful, but they fail to mention the disproportionate crimes committed by young black men, which puts them in the crosshairs of the cops. You had the 30 shootings, for instance, that Noam's been reporting this weekend in around New York City, all involving mostly young black men and some brown men, some Latinos, but mostly young black men. Still, and I think this is the point, and I'm willing to listen to anyone who has a different opinion. It's hard to deny that many cops perceive young black men to be more of a threat than young white men in similar situations. And here's the question I have for you. Would the officer in Charleston, in South Carolina, Slager, would that cop have shot Walter Scott in the back if Walter Scott was a white guy, not a black guy? Now, I don't know anyone that can answer that question, but I do know that the perception exists in too many black families that police represent as much a threat to their sons as crooks. Now, we can't undo the past. What Ball and is, again, I recommend this article to you in Sunday's Times, what he calls slavery's enduring resonance. We can't undo that. But we can make every single police killing in this country a presumptive federal civil rights case. Should be the feds that investigated first and then the locals. I really believe that. It's the least we can do. All right, now we got a couple of things going on. We have Tamika Mallory. Now, Marty, is she ready? Is Tamika? Okay, Tamika's going to call in. She's a part of that justice march from New York to Washington, D.C. But, you know, if you care about this whole issue, civil rights, race relations, I recommend highly that you check out a new website called The Griot. The Griot, www.thebigcityhall.com. It's really a terrific website that brings together these stories about African Americans and their perspectives. And if you really want to be fair about life generally, you should just check it out and see. It's almost an alternate reality. Now, one of the stories I read in thegriot.com is What Walter Scott's Death Reminds Us Of by a guy named David Love. I just want to quote you one paragraph here. The disproportionate representation of blacks and other people of color in police shootings is due to the role of racial stereotypes by police. Racial stereotypes, he quotes this author, Cynthia Lee of Georgetown University Law School. These racial stereotypes subconsciously influence an officer's decision on whether to use deadly force. Even if the police do not consciously decide to use deadly force based on race, a simple question posed to the officer by a black person could be perceived as a threat to the officer's authority or his safety. So David Love, the commentator and the executive editor of blackcommentator.com, joins us right now on the phone. Hey, David, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Geraldo. It's great to be with you.
Now, you're a lawyer, you're a journalist, you're based in Philly. Philly's had its own problems. Do you really, a lot of people will say, come on, man, slavery was over 150 years ago. How can there be any connection? Why do you assume that police have, a kind of latent racism, without hard evidence of it, David?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would begin by saying that it's not necessarily the issue of a few bad cops or the feelings of a few bad cops, but it's a matter of the culture. Like, over years and years, this has been ingrained. Now, I think that it is appropriate to talk about slavery because I feel that those issues really haven't been resolved. The fact of the matter is that communities of color, our first introduction to policing were the slave patrols. And it's been over the years where we have been stereotyped as being criminal, as being those who, society must be concerned about and have to use harsh techniques, aggressive techniques against. All of that, I think, is really coming to the fore today. And if we don't deal with those issues of those perceptions of how blacks are viewed as being criminal, we're not going to get beyond this issue of these shootings by police.
Okay, David Love, hold on. I want you to, if you can, stick with me another segment. But I want to report, ladies and gentlemen, and I mentioned this in the first hour, you've had another unarmed black man die in police custody. Freddie Gray died in Baltimore. He was he got a kind of a rough arrest. Then, this video of the arrest and he looks like he's okay. I mean, he's talking and he's not injured. And then a half hour goes by, no video of that. The ambulance finally arrives a half hour later. And by the time the cops put the guy in the ambulance, he's all busted up. He's got a neck broken. His back is broken and he died. I guess he died this morning or yesterday. You got to ask what happened in that half hour between the videotaped arrest and the ambulance arriving and the guy obviously being roughed up in a way that ultimately proved fatal. Freddie Gray in Baltimore is the latest one of these cases. We'll be hearing about it. But, David, what I have to ask you and about how cops stereotype young black men, how much of that is based on pure statistics? We've had 30 shootings around here in the metro area this weekend, and it's all black young people shooting other black young people, and that's why cops are so roused and so wary. But your article raises a very provocative point, and it's being echoed in other forums, and I want to talk about it. And ladies and gentlemen, I want you to get involved. 866 Geraldo. David Love will be with us when we come back right after this.
Geraldo, the truth behind the story for New York. Live, local, on it, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
25 minutes after 11 o'clock, just a quick note before I get back to our big topic on another unarmed black man dies in police custody. You have Judith Miller is citing a Washington Post article. 7% of journalists are Republicans today. 7%, as compared to 18% in 2002. 7% are Republican.
Wow.
I mean, that's, I mean, how do you, and Roger Ailes, my boss at Fox News, is quoted as saying, the press has already elected Hillary. You know, I just, there's a real slant in a real disproportion.
Well, when you see the way they covered her coronation is what some people were calling it, and the way they called covered Marco Rubio a day later, you'd say, yeah, they seem to be in the tank for Hillary Clinton.
In the tank already. And the Dow's looking good. What's
up? 239. You know, we got killed on Friday, but it's up at 239 points. There's
really?
Been some good earning reports.
So we've made up the losses.
Yeah.
All right. So we've been talking from, I'm telling you, I really recommend it if you care about civil rights today, thegrio.com, the website. Check it out. And a guy who writes for it, David Love, a lawyer based and journalist based in Philly, is on the line. So Edward, can you hang on? Because I got Tamika Mallory, right? We have Tamika, our correspondent from the Big March. I mean, Tamika, I'm holding a picture of you. Man, you are easy on the eyes, and I don't mean to insult you, to say that you're not sincere and intelligent and talented and all the rest. But man, you would definitely turn heads. But anyway, enough about that. Where are you, and what are you doing?
We're in Laurel, Maryland today. This is the final stretch headed into D.C.
So you're in Maryland. So you heard about Freddie Gray, the guy who died in police custody in Baltimore?
Well, not only did we hear about him, we were in worship yesterday in Baltimore and got a call that he had, in fact, passed away and that there were protesters outside of the Western District Police Department. And we went there. We met the community. We met his brother and marched all the way over to the police department. And we actually joined their protest yesterday. So we kind of rerouted ourselves to include Freddie Gray and his family on yesterday.
And why don't you give me a comment on the Freddie Gray case of the listeners not, you know, familiar with it?
So Freddie Gray last week was beaten by police officers. His family and friends who were there say that when the police approached him, he in fact lifted his hands, but the police officers beat him. They believe that he was beaten again when he was inside of the precinct. His brother and others followed him to the precinct to try to knock on the door and ask what was going on. No one opened the door at the precinct for over 45 minutes. His back was broken. His neck had injuries, and he had been in the hospital in a coma for the last week. And yesterday he died.
So what's the moral of the story, Tamika?
The moral of the story is yet another hashtag, another black and brown young person is gone. And that is the reason why we march. A lot of people have been questioning whether or not we're holding up traffic. But imagine the inconvenience that these families are feeling. I went into a community yesterday in that area that Freddie Gray was from. And there were young people there. Young men who you would never see cry at all for anything in public. They were crying like babies in the street. This is affecting communities. My son, 16 years old, called me from school to ask me, why is this happening? The amount of people, over 100 people since January, black and brown people, many of them unarmed, have died since January. And if we don't see this as a crisis, then I cannot call myself, or at least people who are listening should not even consider saying that they are moral people. Because if we are moral people, the loss of life is something that must be addressed.
All right. Hang on there, Tamika. Very powerfully stated. Elaine from Connecticut, you're on the line. I've got David Love and Tamika Mallory. What's on your mind, Elaine?
Oh, hi, Geraldo. Thanks for having me. I have two comments. One on marijuana. I am so tired of everyone acting as if it is a passage way of life, and everybody does it. I'm from Jamaica. I've never smoked it, but because we respect ourselves and our parents, and we had a little thing that's called healthy fear of our parents. It wasn't so much that we feared the authorities, that is police officer, but we respected ourselves and our parents. And secondly, I'm also a mother of two black boys. And there is an issue out there. I go to bed every night and I pray. I pray that, you know, God will keep them on their path. However, I have a responsibility as a mom to raise them a certain way, teach them to dress a certain way, to be a gentleman. And it's less likely for them to be approached that way. Now, with that being said, we have the right to go out there and dress any way we want to without being abused and to come back home to our family alive. So there is an issue. And what do we do as parents of African-American boys?
It's scary. I'm telling you, I in terms of dress, Elaine, thank you for your call. Tamika, thanks for your, where are you going to be in D.C. tomorrow?
We're going to be in D.C. tomorrow.
What are you going to do in D.C.? Give me 15 seconds.
At the Capitol on the West Lawn. We'll be there at 5 p.m. tomorrow with families and loved ones to rally and tell Congress that the time is now to act on criminal justice reform.
Tamika Mallory, thank you very much for your reporting and for your, you know, your conscientious community service. David Love, please hold on if you can. We'll be back.
Live, local, on it. 866 Geraldo, where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
Mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah.
Marvin Gaye. He sang it back then, but it's the song that could have been written today. Way too many young black men dying in encounters with cops. Way too many black men engaging in crimes or purported or alleged crimes that bring them in contact with cops. Now, all these shootings, Noam, this weekend, were they all young black men?
Almost all of them. I can't tell you with certainty 100% because I don't have pictures of all of them, but I can tell you from somebody, of course, this Armani Sexton, who was a sophomore in high school, Patterson Charter School for Science and Technology, a standout, 6'8" at 15 years old, was going to be a true basketball champion, just an all-around good guy, was in the wrong place, wrong time outside a liquor store, was trying to make curfew at his house at 9 o'clock at night, and he just walked past the wrong store, and bullets flew, and he got hit by one of them.
God, I mean, what a waste. He's a kid that had a beautiful future.
In fact, his mother had sent him away to North Carolina recently because things had gotten so heated and bad in Patterson, and he demanded to come home because his mother was having some issues at home, so she said, okay, you can come back home, and this is what happened.
30 shootings this weekend in and around New York City, all involving young black men or young Latino men. Still, and I know that this irks some people, but it is impossible to deny that many cops perceive young black men as more of a threat than young white men in similar situations. And the perception exists in too many black families that police represent as much a threat to their kids as crooks do. And I say we can't undo the past, slavery and all that, but we can make every single police killing in this country a presumptive federal civil rights case, feds first. Then the locals can do their thing. It's the least we can do. On the phone with me, and I appreciate his patience, excellent lawyer and writer and journalist. He writes for The Griot. Griot is spelled G-R-I-O. Check it out. TheGriot.com. David Love. So, David, thank you for your patience. Do you think that things are getting worse, or are they now just that we're hip to the issue and like autism, so suddenly it's getting a lot of attention?
That is a good question. I believe in many ways these things have always gone on. It's just that now we're hearing more about it. You know, we have social media, and people are able to respond to these issues very quickly. But at the same time, I can't help but think that things are boiling over. And it's really an issue of violence in society. You know, I do think that we have to be mindful, and we do have to admit that there is a problem with gun violence in communities of color. Disproportionately, black men are impacted by that. But at the same time, violence is widespread throughout the nation. With 300 million guns, you know, we have a violence problem.
That's crazy, isn't it? That there's a gun for every American? That's crazy. Yeah. More guns than cars.
exactly. White men are, you know, overwhelmingly mass shooters. I think that's something we have to deal with. And also there's a problem with police, with some police, who seem as if they have to resort to violence, you know, never looking at nonviolent ways of dealing with conflicts. And it seems, unfortunately, that it's, you know, it's always disproportionately people of color. I think that, you know, looking at the problem of black men of color, you have to look at the issue of educational opportunities, employment opportunities, poverty, all of those things. But I think we also have to look at the police culture in some cities, and the fact that you know, far too often it's young men of color who are targeted. And I know in New York, and I'm a native New Yorker, I know that for years there was that stop and frisk policy targeting black and Latino men. And it was basically seen as a form of harassment.
Well, I see that. I believe that stop and frisk will be missed this summer. But hold on. You got Robert on the line from Long Island. What's up, Robert? What's on your mind? Robert, you there?
Robert?
Yes, hi. You're on the line. What's
hi,
up?
I'm sorry. I'm from New Jersey. Sorry about that.
Okay, sorry. Go ahead. What are you thinking about?
Well, I have a lot of problems with what everyone's saying right now. I'm seeing people saying that, oh, this is disproportionate of blacks and Spanish people being harassed and whatnot. But most of the crimes being committed right now are those people. And you see it more and more, and they don't want to put it on the news and the radio and whatnot, but their ratio to the white person committing a crime is way above what a white person is doing. So almost, you know, unfortunately, people are dying because of gunshot wounds from the police. Unfortunate that's happening. But most of those stops that it's happened, and we've seen in the news lately, is someone has broken the law and the police have stopped them. If they had just stopped, listened to the cops and whatnot went on, most of those deaths would never have happened, Robin. And it's, again, it's regretful that they did. And I feel bad if someone has lost their lives, and many people have lost their lives. But, again, if you get stopped by the cops, you or me are going to stop and listen to the police and show them the respect.
I got you, Robert. Excellent call, and I appreciate it. David Lowe, why don't you comment?
Well, the fact of the matter is that I am always afraid of the cops whenever I'm driving my car and I see a, you know, police car behind me. The fact of the matter is that people in the black community know how the police tend to act towards them. And, yeah, you know, there are certain things perhaps that you can do to put yourself, you know, at less of a risk of being
like
police.
Listen to the cop and don't resist arrest. I think those two things are pretty important.
That can do it, but at the same time, there's no guarantee. There is some police.
I think that's right too, and therein lies the rub. David, yeah. I got to let you go, and I appreciate it. TheGrio.com is the website. All right, folks, I want to take one more segment on this. That's all we got left.
Live and local, the Tri-State's most important issues with Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
All right, 7 minutes to high noon. Mitch in Connecticut's on the line. Thanks for calling 866-Geraldo. Mitch, what's up?
Geraldo, you know, we can talk the obvious all day long that bad police have to be stopped. But, you know, the issue is couldn't be clearer that black daddies aren't taking care of their babies. The breakdown. It's the cause of all of this. It's the cause of the number one cause of poverty in our country. That's what's going on here, of course.
All right, Mitch, I got it. I got it passionately stated, and I don't disagree. I got Ron Kuby here.
Yeah, if only black men, like, could keep it in their pants, the world would be great. Like, my radio partner, Curtis Sliwa.
Can't keep it in his pants.
Yeah, that's not such a great example. Yeah, that's the problem in the world, right.
But the breakdown of the family.
I'll see you in the nursing home.
The breakdown of the family, though, is undeniable.
Geraldo, how old are you now? You're like, what, 70?
71.
Right. How long have we been talking about, how many generations have we been talking about, it's the breakdown of the family? I remember
my parents
said the same thing.
Daniel Patrick Moynihan in the
60s. Daniel Patrick Moynihan said
it. Got the post office named after him.
His parents said it. I mean, you know, we sound like a bunch of old
farts
here.
But that doesn't mean it's not true.
Okay, but the family, according to old people, has been breaking down forever.
But yet, don't you think it should be a priority
in society? Teenage pregnancy down, unwed motherhood down, educational opportunities up. We're actually going in a better direction. And how in the world is this related to cops shooting black people in the back? You mean Mr. Scott, right? Mr. Scott, 50 years old, in the Coast Guard, a veteran. Had he only had better parenting, that nice officer Slager wouldn't have shot him in the back. I get it.
All right.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Said in a certain here? Burlesque way, but I don't disagree with the point that if Walter Scott had been a white guy, Officer Slager probably would not have. I can't make
yes,
that
of
assumption.
Course
but
you
it certainly
shot him.
It
on,
certainly
on,
is a question you can oh. you can legitimately ask.
A question.
Now,
you
did,
can
you,
ask.
Did you have some problem with my juxtaposition of the legalization of pot with the crime in the black family?
Yeah, man, I did, but honestly, Geraldo, and I'm sorry about this, I forgot what you said, man. I know it, like, really bummed me out at the time, but this is, like, National Marijuana Day.
It is,
dude.
And I think so, that we all should celebrate here in the appropriate way.
Said
and I shouldn't
wrong.
Have a hangover from alcohol, because alcohol so yesterday.
That is so lame. That's so September 10th on 420, so, man. Come on, dude.
So do you celebrate 420
no, you
generally?
You know what? It's been so long since I've gotten stoned. I
is
barely,
that true?
It is. In fact, the last
And why?
Time,
why? Did you? Were you going? Was it a gateway drug for you?
No. Actually, alcohol was the gateway drug. And I went pretty far down the road out of the gate, by the way. But I just get too stoned when I get stoned. It lasts forever. It's like 9 hours later, I'm still, when I try to read, it's still like looking at the zipper on Times Square.
So you, is that...
The author, it's like, stop already.
Is that, you've lost weight. Is that because you don't have the munchies anymore?
No, it's actually because I dramatically cut down my drinking, and I'm started to go to the gym.
Kubi at the gym?
I know. It's like a horrible image. Nobody will get out of their minds.
Well, the image I can't get out of mind is Bill de Blasio running for president. At the same time, this city is now suffering this epidemic of violence.
That's going to happen, Geraldo.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids, some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get... more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.